Hi, guys. Welcome to the sessions. I'm super excited about the guest that is joining us for this session. You know my heart. I want to make known those people that I feel are doing incredible work around the world and those people who I believe are really a real and relevant witness for a very real and powerful God and everything that he can do through one person's life. Well, Sam Childers is a man like this. He's a former Outlaws member who's dedicated years of his life and resources to rescuing children in the war zone of South Sudan and northern Uganda. Childers and his wife, Lynn, founded and operate an organization called Angels of East Africa, a children's village orphanage in South Sudan. They currently have hundreds of kids in their care. And in 2013, he received the Mother Teresa Award for Social Justice. Okay, so let's just talk about a movie called Machine Gun Preacher. Because for any of you who've seen the film, then you kind of have an idea who Sam Childers really is, right? What's the movie about for those of you who haven't seen the film? Well, Sam Childers is played by the actor Gerard Butler. Gerard Butler plays a former biker who decides to go to East Africa to help repair homes destroyed by civil war. Transformed by the horrors that he sees, Sam ignores the warnings of more experienced aid workers, and he breaks ground for an orphanage in the heart of territory that's controlled by a brutal renegade militia. But establishing a shelter is soon not enough. Sam becomes determined to save as many lives as possible and leads armed missions into enemy territory to rescue kidnapped children. I gotta tell you, from the moment that I saw this movie years ago, Sam Childers became a hero to me. You know, there's gonna be a lot of conflict in your heart about some of Sam's methods, but a life like his should make you think. It should cause conflict. I think on some level spiritually, the conflict that he battles is meant to cause us to challenge ourselves, to enter a conflict zone with what we believe and let that conflict take us deeper into our faith. I am really honored and really excited to welcome Sam Childers to the sessions. Hi, Sam.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm fine. I'm super excited to meet you, by the way.
That's awesome. Yeah. We'll see if you feel the same way after speaking to me for a while.
I'm sure I will. I'm sure I will.
All right.
So, you know, Sam, it does surprise me that there are people out there who have not seen the film because it was a big Hollywood movie.
Yeah, yeah. It done very well. Now, if I could only get Hollywood to finish paying me my money, I would really be happy.
Oh, you know, you've encountered the Hollywood studio accounting system.
Absolutely, you know, unfortunately. But it seems funny, though, that Hollywood would do a movie showing one man's struggle to save children from war and then not pay you. And being we have a nonprofit, anybody involved in that movie, all the millionaires involved in that movie, could have just wrote a check and gave it to us. We would have gave them a tax deduction. But, you know, God can take the worst thing and make it into the best thing. So the movie gave me a platform around the world to speak now.
Yeah, it does. And I, look, for we will have people watching who may not have heard your story. And you know something, seeing a film is one thing, but hearing the life from the man who lived the life is a completely different thing. So there is a documentary about Sam's story. I will, throughout the show, make sure that Sam's website is displayed for all of you watching, because you need to feel compelled to support. And I really do mean that from the bottom of my heart. Sam, I want to start at the beginning.
Keep in mind, there's two books also. Another Man's War. That's what I sold to Hollywood to basically prepare the movie.
And Living on the Edge.
And then my second book, Living on the Edge.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning, Sam. I really believe in the power of testimony on this show. It's everything. And the one thing that I love about the film is that it doesn't try to pretty up your testimony. Would you share a little bit about the life you lived and what brought you to Jesus?
I tell you what, I'm just going to share a little bit of my testimony. Okay. Because your show is not long enough to hear the whole thing, you know, the whole version.
Oh, it's okay. We'll just keep you.
The first thing I love to tell everybody around the world is I was born into the perfect family. I believe anyone that gets in a lot of trouble, a lot of times we blame it on the parents, especially here in America. If a kid's in and out of jail, we'll always say, oh, his daddy was a bad guy too. I was born into a middle-class family, born again, spirit-filled. My mom, I believe, came out of the womb speaking in tongues. I believe my mom only sinned 3 times in her whole life when she gave birth to me and my 2 brothers. So my mom was like this unbelievable lady. My dad was an ex-Marine, born again, hard man, but loved Jesus. So at 5 years old, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, if you was to ask me, Sam, what are you going to be when you grow up? I'd have told you I'm going to be a preacher. But at a young age, I got caught up in the system of looking up to the wrong people. When I was 11 years old, I started looking up to kids in school that were 15 and 16 years old. And I'm thinking in my mind, man, I wished I could just hang out with those kids. I wished I could fit in with those kids. I thought they were cool. So in order to hang out with them and start to fit in, I started smoking cigarettes and marijuana at 11 years old. 12 years old, experimenting with alcohol. 13 years old, experimenting with pills, acid, whatever I could get my hands on. And I noticed I'm starting to fit in. Everybody in school is starting to like Sam Childers. 14 years old, I'm snorting cocaine. And I got 16, 17, 18-year-old girls asking me out. I don't even have a driver's license. But I'm thinking in my mind, this is the life I wanted. All along, knowing that Jesus Christ is real, but I'm thinking, I just don't need him right now. Then all of a sudden, I find myself waking up one day at 15 years old, and I have a drug addiction. I'm putting a needle in my arm, shooting up heroin and cocaine every morning, afternoon, evening. I ended up moving out of my home, ended up quitting school. By age 16, I'm supporting myself. I always held a job. My dad was very hard on all of us boys to work. So I always held a job, but I started selling drugs. By the time I was 17, 18, 19 years old, I'm not selling a little bit of drugs. I'm selling a lot of drugs. I started running drugs from Minneapolis, Minnesota to Chicago, Chicago to Orlando, Florida. And then I'm living in Florida. I'm in my 20s at this time. I get into a nasty bar fight. I mean, really, really bad. And I'll never forget that night. I was just trying to go home. And as I was trying to get to the door, I seen people lying in puddles of blood, people shot, people stabbed, people crying out. People thought they were dying. And I remember that night, I made up my mind, if I make it to that door, I'm done living this life. I never said, God, if you get me out of here, I'm never going to live this life again. I made up my mind. You know, I speak in rehabs around the world. And a lot of times people with addictions think a rehab can take the addiction from you. No rehab can take addiction from you. The only thing they can be there is for support, to help mentor you, to help talk to you when you're down. But at the end of the day, if you want to stop an addiction of any kind, you have to make up your mind, I'm done. And that night, I made up my mind, if I make it to that door, I'm done. Well, I made it to that door. I went home. I told my wife, I said, we're moving. We moved 1,000 miles back to my hometown. And when we got there, my wife starts going to church. I knew God was real, but I'm doing okay. You know, I'm doing okay. I'm making money. I just walked away from my own life. I'm doing it all on my own. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I can do this. I don't need God. I know God's real. If you want God, you keep God. You go ahead and pray to him. I just don't need him. I'm doing it on my own. For 2 years, she would ask me, Sam, will you come to church? Will you come to church? Meanwhile, she's becoming best friends with my mother. That's not good, okay? Nowhere on the face of this earth should your wife become best friends with your mother. Now, I might have went a little overboard, but anyways, my mom and her became best friends. For For 2 years, she kept asking me, go to church, go to church. And, you know, in Pennsylvania, we call that nagging when a woman does that, okay? And, you know, as men, you know, men in Pennsylvania, when your wife or your girlfriend starts nagging, we put our foot down and we stop it.
No.
We say, okay, I'll go, you know. So I went to church with her, and it was an amazing thing happened. The more the preacher preached, the madder I got at my wife. I started thinking, I can't believe this woman. She called him up and told him everything about me, because it was like the message he was preaching was right to me. So he gave an invitation to give your life to the Lord. I couldn't stand up. I couldn't even raise my arm. I couldn't do anything. But see, I say this all the time. 25, 30 years ago, preachers used to be preachers. This guy comes walking down the aisle, walks right back to me, lay hands on me, and he says, man, the power of God is all over you, and you're just sitting here. I started weeping. I started crying, and I gave my life to Jesus Christ, sitting in the back of that old-fashioned church, June of 1992, and that was the beginning of a nice ride.
Wow. A ride that you're still very much on. I got to back you up a second, you know, over my right shoulder here for regular Sessions viewers. You know, this is Christina Reynolds. And Christina, I like to call Christina my musical side chick for Jesus. But I know Christina and I last night decided that we would watch her film together because she had not seen it. And we sort of wondered, were there parts of the movie that, like the way the movie dealt with your relationship with Jesus was really beautiful for a world that doesn't know Jesus. And we wondered what the power of that moment was like for you in church. So it was powerful for you, that moment that the Lord appeared in your life.
It didn't quite happen like that, okay? Mm-hmm. That was Hollywood's version.
Right.
But keep in mind that in that movie, it showed me losing faith in Jesus Christ. It showed me starting to doubt. That was Hollywood. Anyone who knew Sam Childers, anyone from the time I started using drugs all the way up to right now knows I have never doubted in my Lord Jesus Christ, even when I didn't serve him. Even when I was a criminal, I always knew he was real. I just thought in my mind, I don't need him, okay?
Right.
You want him, you serve him, I'm doing okay. I never doubted in my Jesus Christ. The other thing that was in the movie that I didn't really like it too much was it showed me having a bad day, going back to the bar room and doing drugs again. I have never one time went back to the pig pen that I came out of. One time, never.
Wow. Wow. You have an incredible strength, Sam, because... you say a couple of things that are interesting. First, it's in the power of, you have to make a decision. You have to make a decision. Do you think that people today, leaders on pulpits, make too little of the responsibility for the person to repent and make a decision?
You know, I'm not going to put that blame on the ministers today. I'm going to go back to the parents today. You know, I believe that the people that's raising the children, we got to put a little bit of blame back on them. You know, I was just preaching in a church last night, and I started talking about how my dad and mom, they were all about us as children working. You know, I started mowing people's lawns when I was 8 years old, 9 years old. When I was 10 years old, I bought my own lawnmower, and I started a landscaping business. Why? Because my dad taught me how to work. Young people today, they don't even know how to start a lawnmower.
Yeah.
You know, you can't blame that on the preacher. It goes back to the parents.
Yeah.
I do believe as preachers, I believe we need to start preaching a little more about heaven. Because a lot of times people think they're living such a good life here on earth. They think, wow, this is heaven. This is living it up. I think we need to preach a little bit more about no more tears, no more pain, no more sorrows. And I think we need to preach a little more about hell as well.
I couldn't agree with you more. Because when you take the spiritual reality away from what our journey is really about, you numb people to what they should be doing and how they should be living and thinking.
Right, right.
So let me ask you a question. You mentioned something in your testimony that really struck me. And I've heard you speak about this before. Marijuana, legal.
Yeah.
It's legalized now in most of the United States.
I believe marijuana is going to become the newest big problem to churches splitting.
I agree.
Over the next few years.
I agree.
Because the Bible tells us we're to obey the laws of the land. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to argue with no one. I don't argue with anyone over serving God, how they believe or not. But marijuana is a gateway drug.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know anyone that ever used marijuana and never tried nothing else. So I believe that marijuana is going to become something that's going to begin to split the churches in the United States.
There's a lot of issues that I agree with you that I think the enemy has set us up for, you know, for split.
Yeah.
Yeah, for split.
Yeah.
So, Sam, I'd like to hear you speak a little bit about this particular question. In your testimony, then, how is it that you get called to Africa?
You know, it was how it all really happened was the second night. See, I consider serving Jesus Christ like going to a buffet. You know what a buffet is?
Yeah, you get a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and it's all good.
And you get all you want, you know. And you can usually, when I'm in a church, you can usually tell who likes the buffets, the big belly guys. But anyways, I consider serving Jesus Christ, you get as much as you want. Some people just want a little bit. Some people want a little more. When I go to a buffet, I get my money's worth, okay? And that's how it is serving Jesus. So they had another service the next night. So I went back the next night to get a little more, but I sat in the front row.
Right.
And all I wanted to hear that preacher say was the altar call. I heard enough preaching. I was in Bible school. I was in Sunday school. I'd done all that when I was a kid. I knew all the Bible stories. I knew them all. I knew God was real. I just wanted that altar call. So finally, he gives the altar call, and I jump up there right away. This man keeps preaching. So, you know, I'm looking around. People are starting to move, just like the buffet, you know. I want to be the first in line in the buffet. So I'm getting worried that this preacher is going to lay hands on somebody else first. And he's walking around back and forth preaching. So I got behind him. I just started walking, following this preacher everywhere. And he turns around. He looks me dead in the face. And he starts to prophesy over me. And he starts telling me that I'm going to Africa. And I'm thinking in my mind, I'm not going to Africa. I'm a white man. Why would I go to Africa? That's stupid, you know? And then he starts telling me I'm going to be in a war. I'm going to be in this major war. And I'm thinking in my mind, I'm already married. I'm not going to be in another war. So finally, you know, I just got saved. So I'm getting all upset. I'm getting upset with this preacher. So I start thinking, I'm going to have to beat the snot out of this preacher. So you can't do it in the church. So I go outside the church and I waited and waited on this preacher. So finally, I waited like 40 minutes to an hour. He comes walking through the door. I start cussing him out. I start telling him, don't tell me I'm going to Africa. Don't tell me I'm going to be in a war. And you know how preachers are when you get upset, they just smile at you. They give you a big smile. And then usually they always say, if you try to tell a preacher you're not going to do something, they all say the same thing. I think they teach you this in Bible school. They always look at you and they say, we'll see. We'll see. I told him I'm not going to Africa. And he said, we'll see. So anyways, I couldn't hit him because he was smiling. So I walked away that night and I knew without a shadow of a doubt, the man spoke the truth. I knew it.
Wow.
So in 1995, I was making really good money. So I started putting a lot of money into Africa. I knew God had a calling on me to go, but I was trying to substitute that calling. I was trying to buy my way out. So I was putting thousands of dollars into someone's ministry in Africa. So finally, in the fall of 1998, I thought in my mind, okay, I'm going to go to Africa, just to get this thing off my chest, and I go. And that's when I went to my first trip. Started supporting Africa in 95, 98, went into South Sudan and northern Uganda, got in the middle of a civil war, came across the body of a small child that stepped on a landmine from the waist down, was gone. And I stood over that child and I said the words I didn't realize I was saying. I said, God, I'll do whatever it takes to help these people. Two decades later, I live in Africa now. Africa is my home. Wow. That's where I live full time. I don't live in America anymore. Wow. Haven't for many years.
Wow. 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 Damn. Wow. Do you think that the anger, the reaction that you had in you, I immediately thought that was a fear and of the fact that you knew that this man, there was a truth that resonated deep within when he said, you're going to Africa. It's like your whole comfort zone is about to get shifted.
Let's be for real. The Bible says we're all called, but few are chosen. Now, you mean to tell me God's going to call us all, but he's only going to choose a few? No. There's only a few willing to stand up and say, here I am. And, you know, when he was prophesying over me, in my mind, I was angry. In my mind, I knew he was speaking the truth. In my mind, I was determined I was not going to go. In my mind, I knew I had to. This was all going on at the same time this guy is prophesying. The same time I was ready to beat this preacher up, it was still going through my mind. He's telling the truth. Right. You know, so then a few years later, it was there every day. I wake up every morning. I knew I was to go to Africa. I knew I was to be in Africa. But I was looking for a substitute for it. I was living a good, godly life, but I knew I wasn't pursuing my calling. See, if there's people out there, you know you're not pursuing your calling. That don't mean you're going to hell. That just means you're not going to live very happily until God brings you home. And so I started looking for something to substitute it. So I started giving money. You know, money is our way of buying out of anything. Right. So I started giving money thinking this was my way out.
Yeah.
And I knew it wasn't good enough. So finally in 1998, I had in my head, okay, I'm going to do one trip. I'm going to do one trip and get this over with. See, I believe God opens up doors for all of us. And when we stand before that door, the decision we make determines our destination in life. And when I seen that child and I said what I did, and then I was in a village that was attacked and people was running, people were hiding. Other missionaries that were with me was hiding and running. I couldn't run. You know, I done what most people would not do. I picked up a gun. I picked up a gun and started defending myself and other people. Yeah. There again, that was a door that God opened up. The decision that I would make would determine my destination. My destination in life, I still live in Africa. I got a motorcycle shop here in Pennsylvania. I build custom motorcycles. It's run by my brother. People come from all around the world just to take pictures. I got a really hot looking shop, MGP Rat Bikes. You can Google it.
Yeah.
The first thing people say when they walk in is they say, why does he live in Africa? Because it's a dream. Anyone that rides a motorcycle, they can walk in. I could live the dream. But see, I see the faces that nobody else sees.
Yeah. Sam, it's the question that hits me so deeply, and it's one that I think of constantly when I think about you and your ministry, and it is what inside of you could be so touched that you would embrace another man's war?
Maybe it's because who I was.
Yeah.
You know, a good friend of mine, I'm on my way to Minnesota, Grand Rapids, Minnesota. And I'll be preaching up there, and it's the same town I was a pretty big drug dealer in. And I look forward to going there every year. And a friend of mine named Norman, we were walking through a graveyard in Minnesota. And I broke down and I started crying because I seen names of people that I put in that graveyard. I didn't kill them, but I sold drugs to them. And they got in car wrecks. They got in fights with other people. They OD'd. And one graveyard, I found four names. And I started crying and I couldn't even walk. I couldn't even hardly stand up. And this guy put his arms around me and he said, but Sam, maybe you had to hurt so many people to save so many people today. Now, I'm not saying that's a substitute, but I was a bad guy. And maybe that's why I worked to save so many people. You know, I started a feeding program over a decade ago, 22 children. Now we feed over 13,000 meals a day.
Oh, my gosh. A day?
I over 13,000 meals a day.
Wow.
I started one orphanage that went to four orphanages. But, you know, something that I found out in an orphanage that the church, we turn our back on, is in a third world country, if you're in an orphanage, you have to leave at 15 years old. 70% of those children, boys and girls alike, end up in prostitution. So we started training centers. We have a commercial farm. We own restaurants. We own hotels. I mean, I work over 500 people a day now in East Africa.
Wow.
Those are people all on a payroll. Why am I doing all of that? Why is it so strongly? Why did it turn into addiction saving people? Maybe it's because I hurt so many people in the past. I don't know, but I'm not going to question it. I'm going to keep going. You know, when I received the Mother Teresa Award, I didn't even want to take it. The day I stood up before the world and held that award up, I told the world, I will not receive this award for what I've done. I will only receive this award today for what I'm about to do. You know, and I believe that as Christians and as Americans, we do a little bit and we get satisfied.
Yeah.
I'm not satisfied. I'm not done.
Wow. Okay, so look, for those of you watching, we have to break for this week. We'll be back next week with more of Sam. I want you to really think this week about what all Sam Childers is speaking about, because when we pick up next week, we're going to talk about what all we should be doing. I'm Cynthia Garrett. You're watching The Sessions. We'll see you next week. Hi, everyone. It's me, Cynthia Garrett. I hope you're enjoying The Sessions. And I just wanted to encourage you to pick up a copy of Prodigal Daughter, A Journey Home to Identity. It's my testimony. And you know, I always say that we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. Our testimonies are our story of what God has done in our life. So I hope that you'll share this journey with me through my book and through the many lessons that God taught me through sexual abuse, rape, cancer, being a single mom, and dealing with all kinds of issues just like every one of you has dealt with. Prodigal Daughter, I hope you'll pick up your copy today.